Welcome to the Darlington Podcast, a production of Darlington School in Rome, Georgia. Join us as we take a look inside and outside our classrooms and connect with students, teachers, alumni, and more.
Hi, I'm Julie Lucas, Chief Advancement Officer of Darlington School, and welcome to the Darlington Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Thomas Cookoff, Darlington Class of 2009, and Product Manager of Omron's Automation Portfolio in the Americas. Today, we'll be talking about life since Darlington, his career, and our Darlington Connects program. Thank you for joining us today, Thomas. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much, Julie, for the invitation to be here.
Great. Okay, well, tell us, first of all, where are we connecting? Where are you right now? Are you in your office?
I am calling you from Omron's Grand Rapids, Michigan office, which is also the study above the garage.
Okay, good. Very, very good. I love it. Well, let's get started. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about Omron and kind of how you got there and what all you're doing. But I'd love to start by what you and I are connected over, which is Darlington. So I'd love to start with your Darlington chapter and want to go back to the beginning and find out how did you end up by the lakeside?
So I would love to say that Darlington was the kind of goal for coming to Georgia. The Cookoff family moved to Georgia from Kansas as part of a startup. And coming from a household that very much values education, when we moved, we were looking for those kind of premier college preparatory schools. So the startup was in Dalton, Georgia. So we're in the Northwest, and naturally Darlington comes to the top of that list. But it was really the balance of not only the academics, but that community outside of the classroom that impressed not only myself, but Robert's class of 2012 as well.
I love that. So the startup in Dalton. So Darlington being the premier, I agree. I love that. So what grade did you start in?
So I started in sixth grade, and my brother, I think Robert started in second grade, maybe third grade. I want to say second, or maybe first. It was early elementary. So he had an opportunity to be what I guess is now a different campus, but on the original lower school campus.
Yeah. So he started over there, and then, yeah, now everybody's over here on the main campus over and starts in Thatcher. Okay. So, okay. Tell me a little bit about what you were involved in. And I mean, you can go back and started in middle school or high school. So what kind of things did you enjoy while you were here?
So I guess I would say the activities, I'll put them in two buckets, inside the classroom and outside the classroom. So, inside the classroom, it was definitely the AP classics, or classes, excuse me. So from physics to psychology, I tried to fill my coursework with as many classes as possible to give me that edge going into college, and to help me just be more comfortable learning. So outside the classroom though, it was all soccer. So it was either club ball in Atlanta, the soccer academy with Chad Little, or the varsity with Kevin Ivester. All the teams were fantastic, but definitely the varsity soccer team holds a special place in at least my heart. Because what's so powerful about the Darlington sports is they are so incredibly inclusive. To so many athletes. When we look at high school sports, it's gotten so competitive. But the varsity sports at Darlington not only give students a chance to get their letter, but also help them become a much stronger athlete than maybe they originally planned on.
I love that. Do you stay in touch with any of your soccer buddies?
Across the gamut, there's a number of them that I do run into. I would say had a chance to spend a little more time on Emory's campus when I was an undergrad, even though I went to Clemson. And not only were there varsity soccer team members who went to Emory, but also club team members who went to Emory. So definitely kept in touch in undergrad, but then after that, I definitely run into them more often than I'd like to admit, in a very positive way.
That's great. Okay, so thank you for sharing that. I love the inside the classroom and outside the classroom. You have to have a little bit of both. And so let's go. You mentioned Chad Little and Kevin Ivester. What about a teacher? So I know, you know, teaching and coaching, but what, tell me about a favorite teacher.
Okay.
And it's okay if you have multiple. I have multiple.
I have two that come to top of mind, but I've got favorite teachers and I have the most impactful. So favorite teachers, Mitch Jordan and Jim Van Ness. Those two both taught math, and my undergraduate was in mechanical engineering. So there should be no surprises there. But definitely the most impactful teacher would be my mom, Barbara Cookoff, who taught at Darlington.
I bet there are a lot of people that share that with you, being the most impactful.
At least one, Robert, and two, my sister, Catherine.
I think there's definitely more than that. She made a huge impact while here. So I'm so glad that startup brought y'all here. I love it with Mitch and Jim Van Ness, and Mitch is back now. So next time you come to campus, you'll have to come visit.
Yes. Cause I did come to Darlington in sixth grade, and he was my first math teacher. So he might have even been one of my first classes on my first day at Darlington, because I distinctly remember going to his math class.
Okay.
And sitting in the back. I was nervous.
I would be too. Yeah. Him and Mr. Van Ness. I didn't have either because I didn't start until freshman year, but I would be a little intimidated in the math class. Well, great. I love favorite teachers. I love most impactful. I love this question about, what about your favorite place on campus? Favorite location?
All right. Favorite location. So this is, I guess you would say, like a geographical location.
Yeah, sure. Whatever comes to mind. Okay. Yeah.
So as much as I would love to say that it was one classroom, one corner of campus, to be honest, it was the spaces between the classroom, but still staying at the very heart of campus. So we break those spaces down. You've got hallways that always brought a friend around the corner. You have the rec areas that always hosted so much camaraderie. And then, of course, the library, which at the time allowed for submissions right before the deadline, or you'd be able to print an assignment minutes before it was due. So really what stuck with me through all of those is that Darlington has a million small places that created intimacy for whatever mood you were in. So, and you could always find others who wanted to share that same goal. So maybe that is conversation, maybe that's ping pong, or maybe that's understanding some Laplace transform. It's all there.
You need to start writing for admissions for us. That's amazing. Spaces between the classrooms. Spaces I love that. Between
classrooms. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, good. When was the last time you were on campus?
I think it was career day 2022.
Yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah.
At least the career day is something that I enjoy. It's an opportunity for alumni to really bring their skills that they might take for granted, saying, oh, everyone's got this experience. Everyone knows what it's like to take boards. Everyone knows what it's like to get to final rounds of interviews. And in reality, not a lot of people do. And Darlington does a remarkable job at teaching the foundations of a lot of well-derived and proven academic theory, which could seem super abstract at the time of learning. But once you start applying it in the real world, you go, oh my goodness, I'm using these skills that's normally in Jim Van Ness's class. I go, this is ridiculous. Why will I ever need to solve for X? Half of what I do is solving for X. So it's a fun way for the alumni to give back, but then at the same time, it's an opportunity for the students to kind of take little snippets of individuals that they see that think maybe I want to start doing something like that, or go, oh, I definitely don't want to do that in my career. And that's super helpful as well.
Yeah. It puts it all in reach, brings it down to, okay, well, it is attainable. I'm about to be a Darlington alum. I can do that. Well, you kind of started to make that transition there of how, you know, how Darlington was able to take you really to that next phase of life. So I'd love to ask you to tell us what happened after Darlington. So once you graduated in 2009, where'd you go? What'd you do?
It was all downhill from there. All right. So first it was undergraduate in mechanical engineering. Entered Clemson as a freshman, and like so many Clemson Tigers, I found my way to football games, social gatherings, and to be honest, just being outside, rock climbing, sailing, and learning to dance. But what I took away from that undergraduate was very much an appreciation for engineering as a whole, specifically mechanical engineering. Because what's so powerful about mechanical engineering, it's really your degree to do whatever you want. There's mechanical engineers who are doctors, lawyers, designers, running businesses, or I'm trying to think of something where I've never seen a mechanical engineer enter that space. Because the engineering world is very much solving tough problems, and the world is full of them. So that's target-rich environment. So since graduating undergrad, academics have maintained their place in my life. So I started with a professional engineering license and used that to kind of cap my first couple years in research and design before heading back to Clemson for my MBA. I like to tell the joke, it was a buy one, get one free deal, which is lands remarkably well for Alabama fans, Georgia fans, and University of South Carolina fans. I don't know why, but it seems to land well. And the MBA was also just so powerful because it allowed me to understand the numbers behind the business. So then I can start leading one. And during that MBA, shifted to product management. And for those not familiar with product management, it's someone's responsibility to grow the profit and loss statement for a business. So what we mean by that is hitting those top line goals. So that's the revenue side, but then also minimizing those costs to have healthy profits or the bottom line. And then after that kind of shift into product management, had the opportunity to join the nonprofit space outside of the 9-to-5, specifically in the boardroom for some public 501c3s, and then also some private foundations. And while I would love to say that for-profit work of product management and the MBA in engineering may appear to be the most glorious, it's the nonprofit work that has definitely been the most rewarding.
Can you share any of those boards you've been on?
Sure. This is where we get to name drop.
I think it's fun. I think it's, you know.
So currently it is the Center for Developmental Services in Greenville, South Carolina. Okay. It's to be honest, just a fantastic organization focused on learning delays for students from very young all the way through high school. But what sets them kind of apart was at the time, Greenville, South Carolina didn't have a ton of services that focused on learning delays. So you had 3-4 of the largest hospitals at the time getting together to say, okay, how do we create this? How do we have this environment for these students? And that's how the CDS started. But kind of going back to career day, what's so powerful about stepping at least one foot into the nonprofit space is there's a lot of skills that professionals and most likely listeners to this podcast have that the nonprofit space just doesn't have. So understanding how to set up an endowment, that's a real skill that a 501c3 would have. So you can definitely get into that space and do a lot of good. Although I would recommend always having directors and officers insurance as part of that board kind of sign on. And then the other two have been private foundations, one with ABB and one with Omron.
I love it. Sounds like you keep yourself very busy.
At least on the facade of it, but that's marketing, right?
Yeah, no, it's all good. Along the way, so tell us a little bit more about Omron and what you're doing today.
Okay.
And so Omron, you start from the beginning. So how long have you been in this space.
Yeah. At least been on the industrial automation space on and off for really since 2015. So I guess 10 years now. So started more on the operational side as an intern for Robert Bosch before jumping into engineering at ABB. But the opportunity to move from ABB to Omron was one that kind of drew me from not only the global footprint of the company, but also the technology. Rewind the clock back 3 years from when I joined Omron. AI was still more machine learning than some sort of generative models that now sit on the phone. When looking at the industrial automation space, the industry as a whole has really lagged the consumer market or the adoption. So a good example of that is, what was it, the 1983 Chicago World Fair? Electricity comes on the lanterns and shocks the world. And it wasn't, 20 years later, 1913, when Henry Ford decentralized production, that electricity does versus steam power. And now all of a sudden you have a moving assembly line and all the benefits that come with that. So I moved into Omron from ABB to get closer to the technology that could host this type of software that would augment the decision making of operators, plant managers, and team members who need to get parts out the door so they can make their kids' t-ball game. So that was kind of the driver. So naturally, what Omron does is a lot of, I don't want to say just the automation side, but anything that really sends and receives signals on the factory floor. So what we mean by that is computers, the programming software, touchscreen devices, and any sort of safety components. You'll see vision, you'll see robotics. So high-speed ones versus the ones that kind of move pieces around as well. So think semiconductor manufacturing, think automotive assembly and packaging, anywhere where you really need to take a whole lot of independent variables, keep them controlled to produce final good. So a lot of the iPhones are used with Omron technology, a lot of the Android phones, a lot of the automobiles that we use to get to work every day come off of technology that Omron has an opportunity to be a part of.
Okay, that's fascinating. I was not aware of all of that. What all types of jobs does a business like Omron hire for? So mostly engineers?
Or? So it's I'll put it in sort of a, I don't want to say a bucket of role, but when we look at engineers, we look at product managers, we look at supply chain managers, we look at analysts, designers, or maybe not designers, but developers. You can, instead of looking at it as the title, look at it as their role. So Omron kind of hires into three distinct buckets. You have designers, explainers, sustainers. So a designer's job is to identify, foster, and really create. So think of it as saying, I've got this new technology or this new solution, and I want to try to solve an old problem. Or maybe I've got this old solution, I want to reuse it on this new problem. Once you have the idea, maybe this is, now we're touching a little bit of on engineering, because that's a maybe stereotypical way to think of designers. But then you have the explainers, which very much distill down the narrative of not only what the problem is, what we're trying to solve, but also the value in solving it, and being able to articulate that to a very, very wide breadth of, I don't want to say of people, but at least of different shareholders within the business, or at least the stakeholders. And then the last bucket is sustainers. So they preserve, maintain, and very much keep the boat steady during times of volatility, or the organization steady. So of course you can imagine marketers being in designers, you can imagine an explainer being an engineer, and you can imagine a sustainer being someone, I'll pick on something absolutely out there. We'll say sales, not that far out there, but at least to say very different than the other two. So it's more, are you at the inception of trying to identify a problem or a solution? Are you trying to scale up that solution? And once you're scaled, are you maintaining? And you can quickly imagine a ton of different metrics and a ton of different people being very comfortable with the ambiguity in each of these buckets.
I love that. And where I was going with that was, you have been involved with Darlington since the day you left. And we love that about you. And, you know, I love that you come back for Career Day. You're always there to help us and come to events and engage with other alumni and students. And so, you know, a big thing about Darlington Connects is it's really a little bit of everything that we do, especially as we reach out to our alumni and parents of alumni and just people who love the school. So we want to be able to offer that connection, alum to alum, parent to alum, you know, grandparent to alum. But really a big piece of it is, if there are people who are looking to connect, whether it's with you about Clemson, with you about engineering, with you about Omron, or being involved in outside of work nonprofits, would you be willing to connect with them? Because, like, hearing the way that you talk about a designer, explainer, and a sustainer, I think there might be people out there who may give you a call or shoot you an email that say, hey, I might be able to be one of these with Omron. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I think you said it very well, Julie. Even though you may geographically leave campus, those values, that service beyond self and that honor above everything, doesn't leave you. So the natural answer that I have, and the one that very much stays true with who I am, is of course. Reaching out to me on email, LinkedIn. I'm trying to think of the other social platforms that people use, but obviously I don't know them. So reaching out to me on those would be difficult. Absolutely.
And we're really encouraging everybody to go to our Darlington Connects group on LinkedIn. We hope people can connect there. We have people that are posting jobs, or we like to highlight and say way to go Tiger when we find out interesting things that are going on. So we really encourage people to connect with you and hear more about all that you've done. Now, real quick, what house were you in? I forgot to ask you that when you were here.
I think it was Barnes.
Okay. Yeah. So I love it.
Yes. Barnes.
Well, good. Yeah. So,
but it was Barnes was the first year, and then you get transferred to another one, right?
Yes. And it's changed a little bit now. So now the boys' houses are Somerville, Moser, and Neville.
Okay. Neville. Yeah.
So I would say if you were Barnes, we'd put you in Somerville now. It's probably where you would connect. Yeah.
And then it was definitely, Barnes to start with, but now it's all coming back Neville, because the soccer fields were named after Coach Neville. And when I got placed in that, I was okay. Not that there's anything wrong with the others, but at least for me, sticking to that soccer ethos was good.
Well, there's another connection for us. My son is in Neville, so. You know, another bond for life. Okay, so we have a few fun questions I'd like to ask you. And these are more just about you, right? So not necessarily about Darlington or your connection, but you know, what were one of your favorite places in Rome? Like, when you come back to Rome, not Darlington, what's one of your favorite places? Whether it's restaurant or place to go or...
I hate to say it, but there's only one place in Rome that I consistently visit when I come into town, and that's Darlington. So I'm going to stick
it is what it is. Okay. Hey, I'm here for it. Okay. What about a favorite book that you have, or a book that you've enjoyed recently that you would recommend to our listeners?
I'm going to focus on the recommendation, because, no one wants to read what, is my favorite books. So I've got three actually to recommend.
Love it.
And they're all three are timely, or at least two of them are. But I find myself recommending these three more than the others. So first one is Leadership by Henry Kissinger. It's just a great, great study on a lot of inflection points during times of geopolitical turmoil over really the past century. It's a really nice way to keep the phrase unprecedented in check, in my mind, at least. Next one is Security Analysis by Benjamin Graham and David Dodd. It's just at the time when it was written, it was very forward-looking, but it very much keeps one grounded when looking at market volatility. And then the last one is the most dry compared to a biography and an economics book. Is the Mechanical Engineering Reference Manual. It is stout, but it is absolutely my favorite resource for keeping in mind those fundamental laws that help me understand what Newtonian forces are doing in the physical world. So what I mean by that is just straight equations, but it is so easy to find everything you're looking for.
Thomas, I don't know if I would find anything in that book that I'm looking for, but I know others will appreciate that number three on this list. Okay, so I would say lighten it up a little bit, but I don't know. What's your favorite show or movie?
All right, going to stick with the movie, and it's Father of the Bride.
No way! Oh, that's a good one. That is a very good one. I have to agree with you on that one. Okay, this one's a tough one, and I don't even know how I had answered this one, but who would be the three people you would like to have dinner with, living or dead?
All right. Three people, living or dead, Teddy Roosevelt, Lee Kuan Yew, and my dad.
It's a great list. Okay. Now this one is a little bit more vague, but we've talked to
you. Well, no, the movie was pretty.
True. That was good. So we've talked a little bit about you and your connection with Darlington. We've talked about kind of how you've left Darlington and gone through the years, some fun things. But what's something that you would like to share with our listeners? And it can be anything. It could be about your career. It could be about Darlington. It could be a takeaway. It could be advice. But just something that you would like to share.
I would say kind of got three parts to this. So maybe it's advice, maybe it's takeaways, maybe it's something to just chew on. First one is to go where the action is and get in the game. Second, I guess this is advice, is you can't be the smartest in the room, but you can be the most prepared. And lastly, don't fear the circus.
Wait, what was that? Don't fear the circus?
The circus. So first one, go where the action is and get in the game. Doesn't matter if you're a fresh alumni, you're going back to school, you're taking a big leap, either professionally or personally, you want to be in pointing distance when an opportunity comes up. And then just be so darn good they can't ignore you. Little backstory on this. I was an intern at Bosch in Charleston. And I was incredibly new at this. This whole professional thing, so much so in my onboarding, you know, you get all these paperwork, you're asked, like, okay, if you have any questions by the HR team, like, just let us know. And I'm reading the accidental death and dismemberment. I'm like, and dismemberment, if I accidentally die, do I have to make sure I'm dismembered so I get this insurance? So of course I have to raise my hand to say, hey, is it and or? And they said, no, if you just die, it's fine. You don't have to be dismembered. So lessons learned there, but it was maybe the third week into the job. The engineering lead for one of the production lines for the Ford Raptor F-150. So we made the traction control unit. So in the intense braking situation, you go full brake and the wheels kind of make that chunk, chunk, chunk noise. It's the hydraulic unit that controlled that brake pressure. He left and it was a hiring freeze at the time. And I just happened to be onboarded by HR. I had a pulse and I had a general idea what a traction control unit was. And I go, cook off, you're in. And there's no way I would have gotten that chance if I just wasn't in the room. So go where the action is. Diving into the second one, you can't be the smartest in the room, but darn it, you can be the most prepared. So often when we look at venture capitalists, we look at any sort of funding, they're not necessarily always backing someone who's identified that problem or identified the best solution, but they're looking to back the person who they have confidence can meet the unknown with maybe it's bravado, but it's also clear-headedness. And from that preparation will absolutely come confidence, no matter if it's a presentation that you're giving to your class or that first round interview. That preparation will just exude that confidence. And from that confidence, you're going to have success. And keep in mind, when you're going through all that preparation, you're really only going to use 10, 15% of that preparation, but you just don't know what 10 or 15%. Then the last one is don't fear the circus. There is a lot of animosity out there. There is a lot of, I guess you can say, abrasive personalities out there. And there's a lot of hard work that needs to be done. So when you face that animosity, face it with curiosity. And when you're faced with a tough task, whether it's an all-night or it's an all-day board exam, you're going to learn a lot about yourself through that process. So definitely enjoy those tough problems. Enjoy that tough work. Because what you're going to come out of it is a much stronger confidence in yourself. And as you go through life, that's just going to compound and create a much stronger person. So at Darlington, of course, there's no cutting corners. And continuing to keep that going forward. One of my favorite analogies on that is if you take a Boeing 747, take off from LAX, and just move that nose just a couple of degrees and stay on that course, that's the difference between New York and DC. So don't fear the circus. Definitely go headlong into it. No matter if it's that animosity you're going to face or an all-nighter.
I mean, you're finishing this podcast with like 3 points of life advice. That's phenomenal.
You laid out the question so wonderfully.
No, this is so good. I mean, I don't know. We can't end it any other way than that. That was perfect. I feel like we need to list those in the show notes so that they can be well, a nice great takeaway.
We've got the transcript. We can just run it back.
Yeah, it's perfect. I love it. Well, I just have to say thank you. I want to say thank you for giving us your time today. I want to say thank you for always giving Darlington your time at Career Day and just everything when you come back and when you come to events and, you know, everything to even supporting just through your time, talent, and treasure. You were always there for Darlington and we are very, very grateful. And I am grateful that you are paying it forward and so that you are willing to talk with other alumni out there or anyone within the Darlington community who wants to talk with you more about your experiences post-Darlington. So I just say thank you.
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to give, Julie.
Good. Well, we will end it today with thank you. We are grateful for you and just excited to continue to watch you do amazing things. And I promise we won't fear the circus.
We're glad that you tuned in to this episode of Conversations by the Lakeside on the Darlington Podcast. Tune in wherever you like to listen to podcasts and please subscribe if you haven't already. You can check out today's show notes at www.darlingtonschool.org/podcast.
The Darlington Podcast, a production of Darlington School in Rome, Georgia, is a collaboration between the communication and advancement teams, and the intro music is alumni produced. See show notes and hear more episodes at www.darlingtonschool.org/podcast.